Hi everybody, welcome to Bad Science, the show that breaks down the science of a movie with a comedian and a scientist. Today we're discussing The Meg. So I'll ask about gargantuan sharks, the deepest parts of the ocean, and how the character of Jonas drank beer every day for 5 years and yet still had a six-pack. But first, a quick word from our sponsor.
Bad Science. Did the movie get it right? Bad Science. Or will we have to fight? Bad Science.
Hi everyone, I'm your host Ethan Edinburgh, and I've got two wonderful guests joining me today. First up, she's the Center Director for the School for Field Studies, Center for Tropical Island Biodiversity Studies in Bocas del Toro, Panama. It's Dr. Cinda Scott. Hi, Cinda.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good. How are you? Thank you for having me today.
I'm delighted to have you. Are you currently in Panama?
I am in Panama. I am in Isla Colón, which is located in the Bocas del Toro province.
Oh, how nice. How long have you been over there?
I have been here almost 7 years.
Wow. And wonderful. Should we take a vacation there? Do you recommend it?
Highly recommend. Panama is absolutely beautiful. You have terrestrial, you have marine, you have the culture, you have it all. So yes, please come and visit when you can.
Okay, I will. I'll just come right after this podcast recording.
All right.
Panama sounds lovely. I've only heard great things. And you have, if I'm not mistaken, a PhD in marine biology and fisheries and molecular evolutionary genomics. Is that right?
Yes. I was in the Department of Marine Biology and Fisheries at the University of Miami's Rosenstiel School of Marine and Atmospheric Science. And my focus of my research was in molecular evolutionary genomics in fish.
And so why do you love fish so much? Where did that obsession start?
Well, I really fell in love with actually understanding evolution. And so fish are our oldest vertebrate ancestors. And you can learn a lot from them because we have a lot of genes in common with them. So why not study them and understand molecular processes that affect us? And yeah, I've just fell in love with fish, always have.
Awesome. Okay. Well, we're going to be talking about huge fish today. And before I introduce our other guest, I got to ask you, you ever stabbed a shark in the eye?
You know, no, but I have stabbed a shark. There's a small piece of cartilage in the front of a dogfish shark. And when I was an undergrad doing studies at Mount Desert Island Biolabs, we would look at their rectal glands. And in order to understand the rectal gland, obviously we had to sacrifice a few of the sharks to do that.
Oh.
And you have to kind of pith the shark as humanely as possible. And yeah, so never in the eye. That I feel like is pretty violent.
So are you saying you stabbed it in the nose? I feel like that's what I'm gathering from this. I don't know if that's accurate.
Yes, but preparing it. So the pith is a very long thing, and you kind of put it through the nose to go directly through the brain and instantly end its life. Yeah, it's not great, but it's...
Okay, you're a monster. Let's hear about our new... Let's hear about our other guest. He's our old friend. He's been on the podcast before. He's a wonderful stand-up comedian, writer, and actor who just released 21 videos in a day on his YouTube channel. It's Joe Quazala. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how's it going? I want to immediately be on the record. I have not killed any sharks.
Good. Glad to hear that. I was going to ask you the same question. So
yeah, I want to preempt that question and just let everyone know I have not done no piercing or stabbing.
Have you ever done like just scuba diving or, you know, spent time in a $1 billion underwater facility or something like that?
You know, I keep getting the invite to the massive $1 billion center down deep at the bottom of the ocean, but I can't find the time to go.
Can't find the time.
You know,
yeah.
My schedule's so busy.
Yeah. Well, you're busy making 21 videos in one day. I have watched them. I laughed a lot. They are fantastic.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for your service, Joe. And thank you for being humane to marine life and not stabbing them through the nose
that's
and the
really,
brain, dude.
That's my true passion. My true passion is to not kill sharks instantly with a piercing hot rod to the brain.
No, it's not hot.
Oh, so it's okay.
To me, in my mind, it's hot.
Okay, all right.
It's ice cold.
Okay, so I have a big question of the day here, overarching question, which is obviously this movie's about the Meg, the Megalodon, a prehistoric giant shark. And so my main question to you to get this started is, did the Megalodon look and act like what we saw in the movie.
Okay, well, let's just first of all back up, because there are a lot of conspiracy theories out there that, yes, Megalodons are still alive.
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
No, they are not. They are extinct.
Okay.
Just for the record, just to be clear, Megalodons do not exist, and they are extinct. So The whole premise of the film, while, you know,
fun,
the idea that maybe there's a Megalodon living in the deep trenches of the ocean, sorry, no, not happening.
Okay, unfortunate.
Well, do we have like a year of the last time a Megalodon was around, like roughly?
Yes.
Like is it prehistoric or is it that long?
So they lived between 2.6 and 23 million years ago.
Oh, wow.
That's a long time.
Yeah, that's a long time ago. To put that into perspective, humans evolved between 300 and 350,000 years ago. So we're talking like ancient prehistoric creatures, right?
Mm.
That no longer exist.
Okay, bummer.
You mean to tell me there's not one hiding? There's not a few hiding somewhere?
Yeah, beneath the thermocline or what was that?
Oh, and this was another part of the film, the thermocline. Okay,
yeah.
There's a difference between a thermocline and a halocline and a chemocline.
Whoa.
And the pycnocline. There are a lot of different clines, but this movie, for some reason, was so focused on the thermocline, I don't understand. The thermocline is just simply a drastic change in temperature as you descend in the water column. So if you're scuba diving and you go down, you might say, oh, I just hit the thermocline, because you're going from the warm surface temperature water down below a certain level. And the thermocline can change depending on where you are. And what time of year it is and all that. So
does the thermocline act as a boundary? In the movie, that's kind of the plot, right? Is that because the thermocline is at a certain level, I guess, there's a whole ecosystem below the thermocline that is like cut off from what's above the thermocline.
Right. So really what I think they wanted to say was the halocline. So the halocline is
classic mistake. I do that all the time. I mean to say halocline and I say thermocline. It's embarrassing.
Yeah, that
sucks. I mean, get your clines together. Get them together.
Right? Get your clines in line.
The halocline is actually where, like, you could have fresh water or salt water mixing. It's about density, right? So it's where different densities of water mix. And sometimes people confuse that with the thermocline, which is where temperature difference is, not the density difference. But the halocline can coincide with the thermocline. So you might see like the blurry water between the two densities of water, and you might also feel a temperature difference. But I really think they were trying to refer to the halocline. And this whole thing about hydrogen sulfide, like a layer, it's just the whole movie. It's just so bananas.
Sure.
You can have hydrogen sulfide there. You could have a layer there.
Okay.
But the way that it was just kind of like an actual gas layer floating there, that somehow the bottom of the trench wasn't actually the real bottom, and that there was just this gaseous layer. No. And then underneath it, like to have vibrant living corals, and then to have like a giant octopus. No. We're talking about like 37,000 feet below the surface of the water. The pressure, the reason why we don't see huge organisms down there from what we've been able to see is because the pressure alone, you know, you have these organisms that are kind of gelatinous. They don't really have a bony structure, it seems, not even a real cartilaginous structure. So they're very gelatinous because they can deal with so much pressure in that way. Yeah. And then meanwhile, you have like a megalodon with a cartilaginous skeletal structure. That to me seems pretty outrageous at 37,000 feet.
That's what I was saying when I was watching the movie. I was like, this is cartilaginous. You can't, come on. That this depth? No way. We all know.
Yeah.
And I kept gesturing to the screen to no one. I had a question. You brought up the squid. Are there squids that big?
Well, it was hard to tell in the movie how big that squid really was. But it was
that
bigger
sucker
than the
was giant.
I mean, it almost
huge.
Swallowed that Star Wars looking glider.
Yeah.
Yeah. And can we talk about, I was really excited to talk about the neoprene game that some of these folks were rocking out, like the fashion. First of all, that is some of the best neoprene get-ups I've ever seen. If you are a diver, ooh, you know that these neoprene wetsuits are a complete nightmare. I don't care what anybody says. There is no neoprene that is comfortable and fun to get into. And if you have hips, you know, so I once got this neoprene outfit and you had to enter it through the head, through the, like the neck opening.
Oh, Lord.
It's a design flaw, sounds like.
Yeah.
You're pulling the entire thing up from, like, you step your feet in the neck hole and then pull the whole thing up.
Yes.
That's
and you
silly.
Do this in front of other people. It's not like a private affair.
Is it made for like cats? I mean, how can you fit, you know what I mean, your whole body into where your neck goes? I don't know.
Well,
stretchy? Maybe it's stretchy.
Pretty stretchy,
material.
I would imagine.
Yeah. Well, neoprene is also really terrible for the environment, and it's not biodegradable. It's not recyclable into its raw components. And there are now some more environmentally friendly neoprenes, such as Ulex, which is actually made out of real rubber and from sustainable forests, which is awesome. But neoprene, I think it's something like people throw away 380 tons of neoprene a year or something.
What?
Oh, I might have that off. But yeah.
Wait, you're just saying that's like old used scuba gear? There's that many people scuba diving?
Well, it's not just scuba diving. It's also surfers. Water sport,
buffoons.
Any water sport, and fashion, and the fashion industry as well.
Oh wow!
Now I know this wasn't in the movie, but I'm just curious. Yeah, just the amount of waste when you scuba dive with your suit. Is that like a one shot deal? Like you're done, then you got to throw that away, or can you? Is it reusable?
No, you use the same suit. You can use the same suit over and over and over again. What happens with neoprene is that with the pressure, as you go down and you dive, the pressure compresses the little like foam cells, right? So the more you dive, the more they compress. And eventually over time, you need a new wetsuit because it's no longer able to insulate the heat.
I see.
I mean, that's got to be bad for your body too, right? I assume you've been on a lot of dives.
I have, yeah.
Do you worry about that? Is that how deep are you going?
I mean, I'm the deepest I ever went was to the Blue Hole in Belize, which I think was 130 feet we went down.
Oh, okay. So you're not going 6 miles like these.
No, we're not going. No, like in the Meg. And that was also very confusing. You know, remember the scene where his nose was bleeding? And I'm like, but you're in a highly pressurized, maybe, correct me if I'm wrong.
I'm just laughing because I had so many issues with this movie, but none of them are the ones that you had.
So does his nose start bleeding when he's in the, like, the little center in the water? Is that what you're saying? I don't remember. I remember his nose bleeding, but I don't remember where it was.
He was in the submersible going down to like save the day because there were two people trapped, I think,
yes,
down there. Mm-hmm. And so I think what happened is he descended too quickly. So yes. Just like an airplane, you have to pressurize the cabin depending on your height and your speed and how quickly you're ascending, so that none of us in an airplane are going to pass out because we're not under a pressurized system. So I would imagine if you're in a submersible that is pressurized, there is a certain speed that you'd likely have to descend at. But remember, they were like, your speed, it's too fast. And he's like, no.
I'm not slowing down.
And his nose is just like blood.
And you're saying that wouldn't happen. If you're going too fast, what would the effects be versus nosebleed?
I mean, I'm assuming that, yes, your nose would bleed, but also I feel like the pressure, you might pass out and like you would die.
Yeah.
Which would be a hilarious ending.
Maybe you or I would, but Jason Statham?
Right.
No, he would not die. He survives. No,
he'd get
all
stronger.
I mean, he can be drunk constantly for 5 years and be ripped to shreds. So God knows what this guy can do.
He's amazing.
Yeah, he really.
That was like my main issue with the movie. Was like,
they're like, yeah, no one has seen him for 5 years and he's like on a beach. He's supposed to be like a passed out drunk and he's jacked,
bro. Yeah. And the only people he knows around him just call him a drunk and tell him you always have a beer in your hand. And it's like, be reasonable, people. That's madness.
Maybe he was just like preparing all those years. Maybe every time he had a beer, he did a bunch of exercise or sit ups. I don't know.
It's probably a Michelob Ultra. That's the athlete's beer.
Yeah. The athlete's beer. He had one Michelob Ultra every day.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And he like filled half of it with Gatorade too, you know, like when no one was looking.
Ew. Sneaking one in.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docu-special on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go back to the show about science.
Going back to the shark.
Yeah. Sorry, Dr. Scott. You're right.
Something that really bothered me about the actual, fake-o shark that they had, it had 8 gill slits. I actually paused the film. What the heck? There is no shark.
How many gill slits are appropriate?
Okay. The majority of sharks have 5 gill slits. Then there's a shark that's the 6 gill slit shark. Then there's a shark that's the 7 gill slit shark. Conveniently named those things.
Yeah.
And everything else, all other sharks have 5 gill slits. They have, 5 gill arches. So
are you saying, 5 on each side?
On each side. Yeah. This is how. Okay. So fishes are divided into 2 different groups. You have teleosts and you have like elasmobranchs. So the teleosts are the bony fishes, and then like elasmobranchs are the cartilaginous fishes like sharks, skates, and rays. So there's just, they're the 5 gill slits, the 6 gill slits, and the 7 gill slit sharks. And the vast majority of shark species have 5 gill slits. So I paused it and I counted them and I was like, this is unbelievable.
I mean, it's the Meg, baby.
I know. That's what I was going to say. Why not give it 8 gill slits?
Evolutionarily speaking, as we do, the megalodons diverged from the great whites, and great white sharks have 5 gill slits. So there's no reason why a megalodon would suddenly evolve 8 gill slits.
Why would it need that also? Like, what would the advantage of more gill slits be? Like, could it go faster? Could it breathe more air or something?
Well, you'd have greater surface area for dissolved oxygen to pass into the blood vessels, the very tiny blood vessels at the gills, so that it could receive oxygen, because fish don't breathe. So they need oxygen to pass from water to their blood.
Okay. And I got to say, I know you're a legit doctor. I looked up your whole resume. It's very impressive, but it's very hard for me to believe that elasmobranchs is a real term.
How about elasmobranchii? Yes, it is real.
Elasmobranchii actually sounds more legit to me.
Yeah. And elasmobranchs, which is, I think, the name of a trip-hop DJ.
Yeah, exactly. Elasmobranchs is playing at Outer Lands.
Also, okay, wait, can we talk about the hydrogen sulfide? It is highly toxic, okay? This is what drove me nuts. They're like, we're through the gas. And it's like, yeah. Okay, you're through the gas. But also, like, hydrogen sulfide, when it mixes with oxygen, it will produce like a yellow sulfur and water. So if they go below the hydrogen sulfide layer, there's no way that there's enough oxygen down there for all of the coral that I saw and the jelly, all those things, that
the
those
new
beautiful
world.
Things.
Yeah. Life cannot.
And then did you see the rover?
Yep.
The rover drove across the bottom and was like crushing all the coral. I'm like, are you not paying attention that there's coral there?
It's disrespectful.
Yeah. I got to say, like, I really feel like we could do a 3-part podcast on this movie. I have so many questions about this. But like, one of them was that I thought it was odd that there were even people going down there in the rover at all. Like, if it's the first time we're investigating something towards the bottom of the ocean, would we not send an unmanned, like reconnaissance?
Well, that's already been done. And actually, there's this guy, his name is Victor Vescovo, and he's a deep sea explorer. And he was the first person to go to the deepest points in every single ocean.
Whoa.
Or every ocean basin, I should say. And so,
does that mean that we know for sure that there is this ocean floor? Because that was what they're saying, is that like the ocean floor is not real. It's actually this gaseous layer we can get through.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so we know about maybe less than 20% of what's out there in the ocean. So 80% of the ocean is really unexplored.
Wow.
80% is unexplored. It's almost like a megalodon could be hiding in there.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, you know,
it seems like a lot of the ocean. Huh, 80%, huh?
No.
Seems big enough for a meg of some sort.
Or two, as this movie.
Oh, yeah, why not a few?
Yeah.
Was that not shocking friends. That there were two of them that magically, like, mean, magically?
Up the ante. It was great.
Oh my gosh. So the Mariana Trench is the deepest trench that we know of, that, you know, that's been explored, that we know. It's 1,500 miles long and it's 43 miles wide. And the Challenger Deep is the deepest point within the Mariana Trench, and it's 35,843 feet.
Wow.
And according to this guy, it took him 4 hours to get down there.
Jesus.
So he went to the deepest points of each of the ocean basins. So in the Arctic, it's called the Molloy Deep, and that's like 18,209 feet. And then the Mariana Trench is in the Pacific. It's near Guam. In the Indian Ocean, it's the Java Trench, and that's 23,596 feet, and that's near Indonesia. In the Atlantic, it's the Puerto Rico Trench at 27,480 feet. And in the Southern Ocean, and Joe, I'm sure you'll have something to say about this, the South Sandwich Trench is 24,390 feet.
My South Sandwich Trench is just about that deep, too. I can put away a lot of sandwiches, so it goes deep, too, over here.
That's a deep hoagie. What's your go-to sandwich, Joe? Might as well talk about it.
Yeah.
My go-to sandwich. Ooh, I just went to a place called Jeff's Table. Have you heard about Jeff's Table, Ethan?
No, I don't know Jeff's Table.
Oh, man. It's like they make really good sandwiches. And
great.
And like, I think it's in Highland. Yeah, it's in Highland Park. And I just got like a really great, like, it was just a really well-done turkey sandwich. And I got to say, that's what it's about.
Fantastic. Would you say it's better than wax paper, which I think is probably my favorite Ooh. Sandwich in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I know. Those are like the two sandwich spots.
Okay, just the fact that it's up there is good.
Yeah. It's at the same playing field as wax paper. So check it out, Jeff's Table.
And guess what, guys? When we come back from this break, we're gonna hear what Dr. Cinda Scott's go-to sandwich is. Stay tuned.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
And we're back, and everybody's wondering it. Dr. Cinda Scott, what's your go-to sandwich?
Oh, my go-to sandwich has always been turkey with provolone, lettuce, onion, pickles, no tomatoes.
Wow.
Tiny bit of mayo, a little bit of mustard, regular French's, not Dijon, on sourdough bread.
I mean, perfect sandwich. My only issue is the tomato. I'm a tomato fiend, but you know, you're much smarter than me, so you know something I don't.
I think the issue is the sogginess factor. So if you have a tomato around, be careful with that bread, or put the tomato in between the cheese so that you don't cause leakage onto the nice bread.
Hot tip. See, you can't order it because you don't know where they're putting the tomato. I hear you.
Thank you.
If you're building it yourself, that's a different story.
Exactly.
You could potentially hide the tomato in a safe place.
Yeah, wrapped in cheese.
Uh-huh, exactly. Yeah, and perfect encasing.
Okay, great. So I was wondering also if we know what happened to the megalodon. They say at one point in the movie that it had no natural predators and that it could bite a whale in half. Definitely want your thoughts on that. But yeah, did something kill it out? Was it the giant meteor? Like, do we know?
I'm not sure on that, on actually how it went extinct. I'm imagining that at 2.6 million years ago, there could have been some event. You know, obviously the dinosaurs had meteors that canceled them out, apparently, but they could have been changing water temperatures, changing atmospheric pressures, all different kinds of things that could have happened.
Mm.
But with regard to biting a shark in half, oh yes.
Biting a whale in half.
I'm sorry, not a shark, a whale. It all depends on the amount of pressure that the jaws are putting out there, like the force. But also, to specifically cut a whale in half, I feel like you'd have to be pretty precise with that. I mean, there's no way that a megalodon is going to exactly cut a whale in half with its jaws. It's just not, I don't think that's very plausible.
Well, they didn't mean like literally, like with like that knife. They just meant like it can like basically cut through. Like, it's just,
yeah.
If there's a whale, it can just like go immediately through it. That's how powerful it is.
Mm-hmm. Or it can eat, yeah.
It can bite a huge chunk of something as large as a whale.
Yeah, I mean, right? Yeah, definitely. I think it had the power within its jaws to do that. But its precision, yeah, I don't know. And then, oh man, there's just so many things with this film. The breaching. I mean, this thing was like a dolphin breaching out of the water. Yeah, sharks breach, you know, but they don't do it very often.
Mm.
And I think they only can breach up to like 10 to 15 feet. This thing was like all the way out of the water, snatching other animals and like diving back in. That was pretty absurd.
Yeah.
And so when you say breach, you mean it's like coming above the surface. Right.
Yes. It's coming out of the water to catch prey. You know, sometimes you'll see whales breaching, you know, they come fully out. But, mm-hmm. you know, it takes so much energy for them to do that, especially for sharks.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a huge energy suck. They would need real purpose to do that, not just for a show for some humans on a very small boat mm-hmm. trying to chase down various megalodons.
It did look cool. What? Yeah. What about all the claims on what it's attracted to? That, for me, like kind of was adding while the movie was going on almost. They were saying like it's attracted to panic motions, and then it was attracted to boats.
Vibrations.
But then, right, vibrations, and then like lights. They said like, cut the lights, it's not going to see us.
I think that they were just playing off of what we do know about sharks, which is, you know, chemosensory, vibrational movements, and they just kind of went crazy with that. You know, how are you going to go down to 37,000 feet with no lights? I mean, that's just not realistic. And you know why? Because there are no megalodons that live at the bottom of the ocean. So you should have lights.
That we know
you
of.
You got to be careful.
Dr. Be Scott, careful. In the 20% that we know of.
Right.
We have a large a conspiracy fan 80%, base.
80%. There's a lot of stuff we don't know.
A lot
you gotta
of
be careful.
Stuff, yeah.
Turn the lights off.
You're in the ocean. Turn the damn lights off. You don't know what's out there.
Yeah.
And that's information given to you by me and Joe. So,
yeah. I mean, if down. We're voting here, two against one, sorry, turn the lights off.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, international waters. There's a line about how he can like beat the shit out of the doctor guy and nothing will happen to him because it's international waters. This has been said in many movies. Is that
so
true?
Many.
I don't know if that's been said. I've not.
Should we get
heard.
A lawyer?
In here? I think you might
call your lawyer, Joe.
Yeah, I'm gonna call my lawyer.
So there is a zone, you know, off the coast of every country. You have a zone in which that part of the ocean belongs to, or is overseen by that particular country, and beyond that. Is it's not controlled by anything.
Ooh.
So yeah, you know, but it doesn't mean you have the right to beat the living crap out of an organism. I mean, I don't know why that's.
Joe,
I will tell you guys this, and I did some quick,
heard from your lawyer.
I did some quick Googling. Google is kind of my lawyer. Thousands of suspected murders occur and go unpunished each year on open waters.
Well, that's true.
Oh.
That is true. That I mean, basically, you are an indentured servant or slave working on some of these shrimping vessels and fishing vessels. They take your passport. You are bound to them. It's really terrible. And it's a humanitarian crisis, really.
Whoa.
Not many people know about that, so I encourage people to know where their food comes from, know where your seafood comes from, and make sure that it is sustainably sourced as much as it possibly can be.
Isn't there a app? I had another, I think a marine biologist was telling me about like a seafood app that you can check that tells you in your area what, you know, what's the right thing to buy. Do you know about that?
Yeah. Monterey Bay, they put out the Seafood Watch, and you can download it and put it in your wallet so that when you go to restaurants, and they have them for different regions, but it lets you know whether or not a fish is overfished and overharvested. So it does like a red light, green light, yellow light.
Amazing.
Use caution. Yeah.
Okay. Everybody get that.
What a nice resource.
Yeah. Seafood Watch app. Very helpful. Okay. We're running short on time. I'm going to ask a couple other quick ones if that's cool.
Yes.
Okay.
If that's cool with you, Joe. We see sharks eating the megalodon. So do sharks eat other sharks?
Yeah, right. Good question.
Thank you so much.
Yes. But do they stealthily wait there and watch and swarm and devour a gigantic megalodon? No. Likely not happening. No.
No, the idea of like prey eating a fallen predator, like, because that's kind of what we were seeing with the megalodon, right? You know, the reversal of predator and prey now that, you know, one is weak or dead. That's conceivable?
Yeah, I mean, definitely you have whale carcasses falling down throughout the water column, and you have scavengers and all kinds of different fish and organisms eating off of those whales to get nutrients, right? So it's possible.
But they wouldn't, like, wisely hang out, yes, watching.
Stake out.
Is that what you're saying?
No. I'm saying there isn't like a gallery of sharks like eating popcorn, watching a gigantic.
It's going down.
Yeah, that was just crazy.
We're going to wait until that whale is hurt.
No, it's all opportunistic. I there's no way that there is a bunch of sharks waiting around.
Okay. And finally, you mentioned a humanitarian crisis. So I wanted to bring up the shark poaching they mentioned in the movie, which I thought was very cool, actually, that they talked about, you know, people poaching sharks for shark fin soup.
Yeah.
So are we doing a terrible job at minimizing shark poaching? I mean, have these people not tried tomato bisque or minestrone? I mean, what is the deal? Like, why is that so important to have shark fin soup?
Well, I think, you know, some actions that we have as human beings are deeply culturally ingrained, and it's really hard to make change when it's ingrained in culture. So, you know, I live in Panama, and there are certain cultural practices that I'm new to and that I'm beginning to understand more and more, and how culture really can influence the way in which you interact with your environment. And so I think we're not doing enough, obviously, to curb this issue. But I'm not quite sure how to go about it because it is so culturally ingrained and entrenched. Hmm. And I, you know, especially with shark fin soup and using shark fins for different medicinal practices, you know, sharks are absolutely important throughout the world. And they're not something that we should always be afraid of. And I think that's one of the other things that bothered me about this movie, is reinforcing the idea that all sharks are evil and they're huge and they're going to destroy you. And they're going to come into a bay filled with people swimming, minding their own business, and suddenly attack. that whole scene. Also, I was thinking about all the sunscreen, the toxic sunscreen that may have been released in the filming of this, if all those people were actually in a real, but I don't know if they're a coral. That seemed to be a kelp forest. But anyway,
Should people not wear sunscreen if they're going swimming in the ocean? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying be aware of what toxins you are putting on your body and also putting into the water. So sunscreens that contain toxins and toxic chemicals such as octocrylene, octinoxate, oxybenzone, and even titanium dioxide. I personally choose to use zinc-based products that I know are not causing harm to corals and that are not causing harm to me.
Yeah.
And to us, you know.
Sure.
There are a lot of studies showing that these chemicals can disrupt hormone regulation.
Whoa.
And can cause polyp deformation in corals. So we know that these are happening in the laboratory studies, but if we know, then we should probably not put them out there. We should be more aware of what kinds of sunscreens we're using and the chemicals that we're consuming. So that scene made me panic because I thought,
that's the scariest scene in the movie for you.
Yeah.
It is.
Oh my God, the sunscreen.
That's why you need a scientist here. Come on.
No, good. No, I don't think I've ever even thought about that. And I'm very white, so that is going to apply to me for sure. I need to buy the proper sunscreen.
Yeah, you probably also need a rash guard that's made from recycled materials.
Ooh, damn.
What?
Maybe.
Got his ass. Yeah, how about you get a rash guard too, idiot?
Why don't you get a rash guard? Get the hell out of my sight. What does that mean?
I just mean to cover your skin instead of using a lotion.
Oh.
You know, you can use, there are other ways to protect your skin than putting on some kind of lotion that's going to come off in the water anyway. You can use a rash guard.
Rash guard. Oh my God, I'm looking at them now. This looks very cool, Joe. This is what we should wear to the beach, bro.
Oh, when we hit the waves,
yeah,
bro?
I'm just going to wear this all the time. I'm going to be honest with you.
Well, I want a photo of the two of you together at the beach with fins, mask, snorkel, rash guards, and zinc oxide all over your faces.
Just, yeah.
No problem. I would love to do that.
Amazing.
All right. Well, the only other thing I had, and maybe Joe, you can help me out with this one, is how does Jason Statham maintain that beard stubble throughout the whole movie? It's like the same exact precise length.
Yeah. You know, I think it has to do with the pressure, the pressure of the water. It's that definitely will maintain a certain length of beard.
That's what I was going
to
say.
Yeah. And also, I got to say, this is not related to anything, but just looking at him and being like, you know, we don't have a ton of bald movie stars anymore, and it really works for him, and God bless him, you know.
And The Rock's bald.
That's true. Yeah, he sure is. And, you know, there is something about, like, I think you can get away with being bald if you're buff.
You clearly.
But, like, when you're bald and, like, kind of scrawny, you just look like Billy Corgan.
There's no in between. You're either a huge... No. Rock star, famous, buff, athlete, movie star.
Or you're Moby.
Or, right.
Oh, no.
Like, there's really...
No.
Or you're a dorky DJ, a vegan DJ.
Yeah, you're... What was the DJ name? Obel Shranks or whatever?
Elder Brinks.
Elder Brinks?
I don't know. Dr. Scott, what was that?
Elasma Brinks.
Elasma Brinks.
Elasma Brinks.
Yeah, you're either The Rock or Elasma Brinks. If you're bald. I'm sorry, yeah. That's the truth.
I'd just like to add that I think that this movie was about 45 minutes too long. I think it could have ended.
Thank you.
You don't see the Meg for like the first hour or something. Like, it takes a long time to just see the Meg.
Yeah.
And I kept screaming, "Where's the Meg?" while I was watching.
I feel like the movie could have ended with the father's passing, you know, the dead dad. Mm. The sure. Woman. I feel like we could have had closure there,
mm-hmm.
But then it went on. It went on and on.
Well, you needed Rainn Wilson to die because he's just such he's such a dick, and that's very satisfying.
Yeah, billionaire death, mm-hmm. Always good. Throw in there, and you needed just that mercenary scene where they're dropping depth charges. Right, gotta have that.
And then they're like, "Oh, it's a whale."
Yeah. Whoops.
We blew up a whale.
Blew up a whale again. I mean, I just love that as we're winding down as a scientist and you know, you're trying to look out for ecosystems and stuff, you had to just get in one more shit on the movie. I thought this movie was too long.
Story structure.
That was the one point you really wanted to make.
Yeah.
Dr. Cinda Scott, thank you for joining me so much. Joe, as always, it's a freaking pleasure. Joe, these videos are so great. People can get them on YouTube. Is there something you want?
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, go.
You can go to my. I put them all on my Twitter too, at JoeKJoeK, and you know you can go to my YouTube or my website. I tried to make it accessible everywhere. JoeQuazala.com. Just look at the title of this podcast to see how to spell that. But yeah. So there's a bunch of videos. It's over an hour of stuff. So if you're looking for something to just sit back, hit the playlist, it'll, you know, automatically play them. Hopefully it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, they're great. And they completely range in like genre and style. So you're definitely going to find something that you love, whether it's like a music video or, you know, a funny sketch or something dramatic, scary. I mean, he's got it all. So you really need to at least watch some of them, or else you're as good as a shark poacher and you deserve to be jailed.
Agreed.
Is that accurate?
Yeah.
If you don't
accurate.
Watch my videos, I will take you to international waters and beat the shit out of you.
There's nothing anyone can do about that.
It's a promise and I'll get away with it.
Wow. That is...
That's right. As far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
Dr. Cinda Scott, anything you'd like to inform people about?
I think just making choices that are marine friendly, you know? If you can buy a wetsuit that is not based on petroleum products and drilling, that's great. If you can avoid using sunscreens that are toxic, that's wonderful. If you could please get the word out that sharks are absolutely important in the ecosystem and to leave them alone and to please not harm or hurt them. And, you know, the sharks keep everybody in line. If you want to overgraze on that algae, no. The shark's going to come and put you in line. You don't get that
algae.
I
don't think so.
No.
I love that.
So, you know, just to be more aware of the stuff that you buy and the things that you consume.
Excellent. Yeah. Great advice. I will reiterate that Seafood Watch app as well. You know, get to know what you're eating and buying. And if you see a shark poacher, man, take that fool out. I give you permission on this website, on this podcast. And maybe we can do away with Shark Week while we're at it. I feel like that's not helping anybody as far as the, you know.
Yeah. More Shark Tank, less Shark Week.
Yes.
That's what I say.
Great. Love that philosophy. All right. Thank you both so much. We'll talk for the Meg 2, which I believe is happening.
The Meganing.
I think.
Wait, are you serious?
I believe it's called The Trench. The Meg, it's called.
Why?
The Meg 2, The Trench. Because it made money.
No.
Yeah. We will talk at that point. But until then, have a wonderful time. Thanks for joining me and goodbye.
Take care.
Bye.
Bad Science is a Seeker podcast produced by Emily Feld and me, Ethan Edinburgh. Our editor is Lucas Bollinger, and our social media is managed by Blue Whale Media. Shout out to EJ and Kate.
And the executive prehistoric deucer is Brett Kushner.
Oh, follow us on Instagram at Bad Science Pod. If there's a movie you'd like us to discuss on the podcast, feel free to email at badscience@seeker.com. That's badscience@seeker.com. And please leave us an iTunes review. Give us 5 stars. I sound like an Uber driver, but it does help. It makes sure people know about the podcast, which we really appreciate. Thanks for listening. Bye.